Welcome to China Money Network's AI Evolution Event Series. My name is Nina Xiang. I'm the co-founder of China Money Network. I'm so happy to see every one of you here on this Monday evening for joining our three wonderful speakers on a timely discussion of how do you prepare your organization for the coming artificial intelligence workforce, which is expected to replace around half of the world's jobs in the next 10 years. So our speakers are top tier investors and executives from AI companies. In the next hour, they're going to share with you their insights, their tricks, and also answer your questions. But before we start, I'd like to thank our sponsors, NakedHub, Shanghai Xintiandi for making this event possible, and also our partnering organizations, including JNN, China Venture, and Essentia. Okay, so let's keep the introduction short and then jump right into the topics. First, I'd like to ask the three speakers to each give a very brief introduction of yourselves. Ken?
Hi, I'm Ken Xu from Gobi Ventures. Gobi is an early stage kind of focused kind of venture firm. We come to China 2002. So right now we have 9 funds in the management, total assets in the management. Something around $700 million. And we usually do Series A, and also a little bit Series B, technology oriented. So looking forward to kind of working with you guys.
I'm Yiya Xu from Shanghai Robot. So we are AI company, you know, focus on, you know, promote, drive the AI commercialized application in the finance and the carrier and the other large enterprise. We have a lot of the, you know, user case and practice in China market. So especially in the, you know, virtual customer system, which we have, you know, dominated this market. Okay. So very appreciated, you know, the China, you know, money network
inviting us. Thank you.
Okay, to join this.
Thank you. Max?
My name is Max Inkelevich. I'm the CEO of a company called WorkFusion. We're the leading robotic process automation company in US and Europe. We create AI robots that replace knowledge workers.
Okay, so let's first answer the question of how fast do you expect this AI workforce to actually really come in a big way? The estimation of replacing around half of the world's jobs is according to Dr. Li Kaifu, which is who is a founder of Chinese venture fund Sinovation. But do you agree, or do you think he's too fast? His estimation is too fast or too slow? Max?
So we estimate, based on our customers who are banking, insurance, healthcare, and telcos, about 70% of all the jobs in each companies can be replaced with what is called machine learning. And give you a specific case, it takes about 500 repetitions for us to learn somebody's job. So it's between 8 to 12 weeks where the robot becomes a lot more proficient. So my estimation is that number of replacing about 50 to 70% of work will happen within the next 3 to 5 years.
Three to five years.
The problem is not the technology capabilities, it's the ability of the organization to manage change.
Okay. But you're talking about very specific sectors and companies. What's your estimation for the overall? Let's look across industries and across geographies, or let's just, you know, keep in the advanced economy, for example. What's your estimation? Do you think Dr. Li is being, you know, too optimistic or pessimistic?
He's duplicating research that was done by McKinsey that estimating 51% of current job tasks can be automated with levels of technology that we possess today. Those fall in 3 categories. 2 of them are knowledge work. It's data collection, data entry, and one of them is repetitive physical labor, like laying bricks. I think the knowledge work, so 2/3 of that 51% of all the jobs in the world, which is trillions and trillions of dollars, can be automated within 3 to 5 years, given the speed of adoption, you know, up to 10, right?
What about Yi-An? What's your estimate?
I'm familiar with the customer service side. Gartner estimate till the 2020, around 85% of the customer service work will be replaced by AI. I believe so. Now it's started in China market.
What about Ken? Can you provide perhaps a perspective from an investor? You know, because of this trend, how are you positioning or changing your investment strategy because of these changes that's coming?
Yeah, of course. Like, I think most firm in China has been facing the kind of challenge of increased human capital, and also the so-called efficiency issues. So we definitely believe AI will be a big wave and also replace out the potential human laborers. But also if you look in China, you would find if you parking a car in a garage, you'll find even though they have a smart parking system, you still have a couple guys down there. Right? So that's sort of very China. You go highway, even if they have the full automated system, they still use people to charge you. So China is a very special market. We think, of course, for the financial sectors, I think that the compare higher pay sectors will face more challenge, especially this duplication work. For example, broker, those guys. I think if you're reading these sectors, you are the guys should be fear the so-called Australian from AI, because I think those kind of work is easily replaced by the so-called automatic system, and also because your cost structure is not really favorable, and the banks and also financial institutions have tons of reasons to replace you with something much efficiency and much accurate and much more cheap. So I think depend on the sectors, but heavy labor, I think in China, will still be measured by the the human. And if government will really boost the demand for those things, I think it totally depends on which sector you are.
Okay, so then let's talk about the sectors. Every company perhaps should have already thought about how do you change your businesses to adjust to this coming AI workforce. But Max, if you could maybe separate those organizations and companies that's most at risk if they do not adopt a smart AI strategy right now, they would be outsmarted by their competitors. Who are those other organizations that's maybe perhaps less at risk?
So the knowledge enterprise is the enterprise that's the most at risk. They are going to...
What do you mean by knowledge?
So anybody who, for example, banking, financial services, insurance, the enterprises who package and sell not physical goods, but really virtual.
Does that include consulting firms, research firms, data firms, trading firms?
Data firms, it's a huge, huge number of the economy. Healthcare as well, right? Because all they are is really data and people knowing how to craft products from that data, if you think about it at a high level. So because we're going through what is called fourth industrial revolution right now, they're suffering the fate very much similar to textile companies that took the first brunt of first industrial revolution, which is you went from a craftsmanship approach to creating textile products to using steam engine technology to automate most of that work. And of course you went through a period where you lost a lot of jobs. So knowledge enterprises are very much similar to factories of the early 1900s right now. There's tons of people coming into work, very much craftsmanship approach. These are the enterprises that are most dangerous. If they don't change, they will become tremendously inefficient and their cost structure will not be able to support it. So we see very successful companies are getting ahead of it and trying to make it, they're going through digital change and bringing in the digital workforce and so forth and so on.
And who are the non-knowledge sectors and what are those type of companies?
I think the service dependent companies that provide consumer services. So if you think about nursing, if you think about haircuts, massages, of course,
food
delivery. So anything that's sort of very service oriented requires a lot of dexterity and not very cost feasible to replace or industrialize, because you see that customer service, they will not be effective. Also, I think the especially in the US, the self-driving sort of technology will take some time to mature until it gets approved, right? So we're looking at 10, 15 years probably, because it has to go through multiple regulatory phases. But yeah, if you're a gardener, I think you're fine.
Okay. So, yeah, Shell iRobot's key business is helping call centers of big banks, big financial institutions, big companies, China Tech, China Telecom, China Unicom, to manage or replace workers in their call centers and customer service departments. Mm-hmm. Outside of that, where do you see the parts that, you know, in a very short period of time will see dramatic changes because of AI?
I think about the government, you know, related public sector, not only government, but also the public sector, such as the healthcare and the lawyer. We now start to explore that area to, you know, AI as a, currently AI is the assistant to them to, you know, figure out the trends or something like that. And the government also have the, you know, service agent also have the pressure because they have the limited budget. They want to reduce their cost and improve their efficiency. So they will gradually, you know, adapt AI to prevent from more and more budget invested in the people. Okay, I think that's true. You know, that public sector will have a, you know, great opportunity in the AI application.
So Ken, you're actually investing in AI companies. Actually, we just had a talk before this event. Maybe you can just give a brief assessment of, you've talked to hundreds of AI companies already. What type of AI companies are you most optimistic about right now?
I think, like, you know, if you're looking the whole channel, kind of, you know, so-called VC investing kind of trends, like in AI sectors, I mean, like the first couple of years is totally purely kind of people bump money into the so-called algorithm companies. The tens of algorithm companies come out, like usually from the US or from Europe. So with some sort of kind of, you know, very fundamental kind of algorithm kind of approach. So, and they attract tens of money. But after a couple of years, I think most people are starting to kind of invest into the so-called vertical sectors and the so-called solution-oriented AI kind of, you know, kind of providers. And especially, I think that the most kind of, you know, hot sectors in China right now, one is kind of, you know, there are a couple of sectors, like one is in the so-called financial. Certainly that was like, you know, the people.
That's pretty much mass company.
Yeah,
and
because
so
it's heavily process driven and heavily data driven, and the cost structure is not favorable, so tons of things kind of, you know, there make people think like, I believe, yeah, we have to do something to change it. And the other is like, you know, so-called healthcare, like, you know, basically like, especially in China, I could, like, you know, most of the kind of hospital kind of, you know, run on the so-called pretty low efficiency. And they're looking for the, how to use their data, leverage data to do that. And the other one is education, actually. Surprisingly, education is also very heavily kind of, you know, invested by the kind of, you know, masters in the AI. We're playing very, very, very important roles in the education, especially in China, because, you know, I think that because of all of the system, kind of China is a very score kind of, you know, driven kind of testing system. So before that, like, you know, the guys have a so-called like, you know, he had a way to kind of do the analysis, do the conclusion, so what's the best way to solve a problem. But right now, when AI kick in, like, you know, just put into the so-called database of the whole testing kind of papers, so the AI will tell you, like, you know, what's the most kind of, you know, which kind of, you know, kind of type of question will be, have the high probability come up, and how you solve the problem, how efficiency, how kind of you kind of, you know, figure out like what teacher will testing you, and how you give teacher the answers. So those things becomes very kind of, you know, very important for the parents, because you want to see the results, and you want to see how your kind of kids improve, not really on the skills, but the skills of how to solve a problem, not skills how to kind of, you know, understand
right.
the knowledge itself.
Right, so teachers are also at risk. So now so the takeaway from this past 5 minutes is knowledge industries, you really need to, you know, be worried and think about how your organizations need to adapt to the coming AI workforce. Just want to do a quick survey. Anyone here who's not in the knowledge sector, please raise your hand. Two. Okay, so pretty much everybody's in the knowledge sector and very relevant subject. So once we decide the majority of the professionals here and you know, in the broader workplace need to actively think about an AI strategy, then what is the key ingredient for a smart AI strategy? Max?
Well, I think when it comes to enterprises, and this is our core customer base, the key to their success is really organizing around an implementation, an enterprise-wide implementation, which means creating a center of excellence around a company like WorkFusion, and really creating incentives for managers from the top down, from the CEO level down, to automate more. And that's what we've seen in successful implementations in US, in Europe, and now we're seeing it in China. And the driver could be more scale or less FTEs, but it's really organizing centrally around it.
Are you really saying that prepare a huge budget?
It's prepare the skill sets to deal with implementation of artificial intelligence, because that's vastly different than programming, vastly different than operations, and people are very much confused what AI really is on a technology level or from the point of view of what is a good use case for AI, right? So an enterprise can have many different processes, you know, which ones are good, which ones are not so good. So this center of excellence has to be ready to do two things. One is to identify use cases in different business units, and if you can imagine, a bank can have, you know, commercial lending and so forth and so on, and at the same time also implement the software or guide the implementation of AI software, which is different from a software development lifecycle.
So basically from top down, the highest level chief executive officer have to be fully committed with budget, with time, with resources, with actually motivating the whole company to implement a coherent AI strategy. That's what you...
We find that it's very not, it's their number one priority right now. All of the conversations that I'm having in China, in Asia Pacific and US, are all with chief operating officer, chief executive officer, that are essentially looking ahead to stay competitive, right? It's a competitive advantage, they understand it. It's mainly organizing.
Okay, so your angle is more implementation, but Iya, do you have anything to add from the strategic thinking level?
Firstly, I should say I agree with Max. You know, our chairman is also Max.
Right.
When I, you know, leave office here, we have a short talk, okay, with our Max, Max Yuan. We agree, you know, AI strategy should be part of the enterprise development strategy. The CEO level or CEO, the executive team should have a very strong drive and a vision how to embrace the, you know, AI. That's very, very important. So I agree with, totally agree with these banks, okay? The secondly, I think the enterprise should focus on how to, you know, figure out the commercialized, adapt the commercialized application, AI application into your, you know, business process or your, you know, certain department. Instead of only care about AI term, discuss about the technology. You know, so commercialized application is very, very important. Okay. The third one is very important is the talent. They should have the talent, AI talent recruiting. The last one is they should prepare the data. So lots of the data and the information should be qualified data and information. Then they can adapt AI. So lots of work should do, just like IT revolution is the same. Okay, that's what I think about that.
And just to add, the reason why you're hearing so much about implementation and less about strategy, because this technology is here and now, and every chief executive officer is focused on implementation right now, not sort of thinking about, well, it's 10 years from now. They know it's here, so their main challenges are, how do we implement it as fast as possible? So that's why you're hearing a lot of tactical things versus strategic, maybe, that were showing up 5 years ago.
Good point. For the AI companies that you have talked with, those are AI technology solution providers. When they talk to companies, what kind of challenges do they face when they want to convince the company that right now is the time to start implement AI?
I think I agree with Max and also Ian, basically most companies, especially big companies, has their so-called AI strategy on their roadmap. I think for the kind of solution provider or contact provider, one of the things is just not being dragged away by the kind of company so-called AI anxiety. Some people is really get pretty scared and think that AI is coming. Of course, I mean, it's coming, but for some companies, they just have no clue at all. Basically, they just try to tap out everything. So if you face that kind of customer, you have to have a very clear kind of way to steer them through how the solution helps them solve the problem, what their potential kind of key, so-called pinpoint are. I think the one thing. The second thing is basically think about how long the project could be. It could be last much longer than what you saw. Like for some company, even if they talk to you, they want the solution next day, but when you're really getting to the company, you'll find they have nothing in hand. So you have to start from very, very early scratch. I mean, the project is supposed to be finished at 2 weeks, 3 weeks, a month, 2 months, turn out to be a 2 years project. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, for the customer, of course, I mean, it's like the challenge, but of course for you, it's also the drag on, because as most companies in the AI sector right now, it's still in the early or middle stage. I mean, that can kind of drag you, spend all the dry powder and then go waterfall. So that's the thing should be careful. Mm-hmm.
So Max and EAS companies are mostly serving large enterprises. I wonder for medium-sized companies or even small companies, what's the relevance of AI for them and what can they do, any of you?
We serve the small business and mid-sized business market through our product that is free. It's called RPA Express, which allows small enterprises or middle-sized enterprises to create simple robots to perform things like, anything from reading customers' emails to uploading stuff to Excel and go from there. So it's a self-service free tool that allows you to create sort of simpler robots, unlike enterprise customers that create much more complex processes. So that's the way we serve customers in the smaller segment, and we believe that they will get the wave started there on their own.
And do those free platforms offer true value? Do they really give us an example?
Absolutely. It's primarily focused on data entry work, which is very plentiful in either call centers or back office, or if you have finance and accounting. So, data entry eats up so much time. So those robots will actually do the data entry for you.
Okay, great. And Ian, do you have anything to add?
We also have the solution based on the cloud to provide, we intend to provide a simple service, just like Max said, to the small customer. And of course, it's very cheap, or sometimes it's free. But the other side should be standardized service, so it's not so easy to find a point, you know, to, you know, meet the small customer requirement and the balance with the, you know, so complicated technology problem. So in my opinion, is now in the current time, the small companies cannot, my personal opinion, okay, is cannot effort to that. The only choice is to, you know, choice adapted very simple solution. Cannot have a high, you know, expectation about that because it's cheap. It's the standards, no customization. So that's different what we provide to the CMP or to the China unicorns. That's totally different. So when we you know, from the market landscape, we haven't find, you know, true, you know, very successful case, you know, have a real, you know, business model in China market, can serve the, you know, small company and then can have a very high growth rate. We haven't found such kinds of the practice here.
Okay, so we know AI's foundation is data. So the first step of implementing any AI strategy is data cleaning, data integration, data aggregation, and then you can run your algorithm and self-learning processes. In this process of companies trying to clean their data, breaking down silos, what are the most common mistakes do you see? Max?
So our company was started at MIT Computer Science and Artificial Intelligence Labs in 2009. And the core of our invention is actually not requiring a customer to provide clean data, because we realized early on that what is called training sets for machine learning are a big problem, because customer doesn't actually know what good data is, because they're, because humans are doing this work. So we've invented something that essentially looks at human performance and evaluates the quality, predicts the quality of human performance. So it's a robo-boss function that works along with automation function. And that's what we see the biggest problem being. When you come to an enterprise and say, well, I'm going to automate your claims, you need to provide a training set. And you ask the customer to provide, give me all the good claims so I can train my machines. And this is where you run into a problem where AI is like a child. You need to train it on good examples. If you provide it bad examples, it'll continue to do worse than humans. So you want to create AI that's better than humans. So the way to do that is only to have clean data. And it's a chicken and egg problem, because you're continuously facing bad data, then that creates bad AI. So we invented something that's called human in a loop, which uses two AI systems. One is for validating and predicting human output, and the other one is for validating it, and it goes round and round. So we've realized that problem early on.
What about IA?
So I think the, you know, the qualified data is very, very important, you know, to AI. So in Chinese, AI means 人工智能. So the data cleaning or data aggregation or something like that is the task for the human. If the human being wanted to embarrass the, you know, wanted to adapt AI, maybe the first work we have to do, pay a lot of effort and the cost, lots of money and the resource to do, is gradually, you know, clean our data and information and knowledge and then feed it into a robot. And then you can make the robot or AI more and more intelligent. So in Chinese, 人工智能. So the human being is at the first, and the intelligence is the second part.
I'd like to get your view on the future. So we've talked about the coming AI workforce and how do companies prepare for that. What's your outlook for the future in terms of AI's impact into different industries? And, you know, everyone here, like in 5 years and 10 years time, any of these knowledge workers will need to work 5 days a week, or, you know, 4 days or 3 days?
Well, that's a great question, actually. I think like in the long run, I would say like, you know, we kind of see one of the trends with like, we see it with AI as a tool. Actually, it's a very strong tool, or very strong weapon in your toolbox. So actually with that tool, so most people as an individual can do pretty kind of low work than before. So if you're talking the other way, you have better tools, you can kind of be more efficient, you can do more things, which is actually good. Because I think like, you know, in the end of the day, I think right now, like most people here, your demand become more kind of, you know, the variety because of your demand become is greater and greater. So it's not like before, you guys go to basically like traditional way, like you go to Nicolo, you eat a McDonald's. Right now, people just, the demand go diverse, like in a dramatic way. So if you kind of equip with the right tools, you can provide a certain service, actually enable yourself become service provider, or kind of become product provider. So totally depends on how you look at it. I think the tool, basically, you can knife to kill people, you can knife to cut the vegetable, you can knife to do the other stuff. So I think in at least like in 5 to 10 years, AI is still a good tool for you to use. That's actually for knowledge workers. I'm not talking about you do a kind of, you know, repeating work in big kind of, you know, financial institution. So I think if you're keep doing that, you better drop your job, right? Because you're going to be laid off sooner or later. But if you can use that AI and use your knowledge, combine it together, actually you are in better position. You're actually running a very high efficiency, lower cost, and a better so-called high flexibility, which is the, one of the very important kind of, you know, so-called factors in the long run, especially for the service industry, also called products industry. I think it's a great future for you guys.
Okay, so yeah, what about you? What's your outlook for human and machine workers in the future?
I think in the long term, and the human and the machine will coexist in this world. And the machine is designed by the human, okay? And for long term, it should be the machine will be the assistant for the human, just like the other, you know, information revolution or industrial revolution. So that's no different. But we should be careful about if the human in the, you know, in the call center, or if the machine in the call center, and the skin redesign should be careful to adapt to the, you know, ethnic and complex, something like that. So we should think about that. We in the world we now discuss about that right now, but now no vendor has adapted that technology. We should start to discuss about that. We'll be careful. So the machine eventually designed by the people. If the machine will be out of control, I don't know. But
right.
But now currently, it's that machine is only a rule based. You know,
right.
Not just like we see in the film or in the.
That's a topic for another discussion another day.
That's human imagination, okay.
Right. So what about Max?
So I'll stay away from too far in the future prediction of, you know, developing self-consciousness and so forth and so on. I have opinions around general artificial intelligence. But in the short term, we have to look to the past, which is industrial revolution, and what happened then, because AI is obviously leading this fourth industrial revolution. You've had destruction of a huge sector of jobs, again, looking at textile and so forth and so on, but then new jobs were created, so new skills needed to be developed. There was obviously a period of downside where millions of people were unemployed and there was, you know, downside to the economy, but eventually things you've added more jobs, you've added better growth. So I'm a huge believer in what is called universal basic income for people that are going to be out of work because of artificial intelligence, because you will need some time to figure out what these new jobs are, right? And in our case, we have, we're actually trying to create jobs by educating people of how to create robots and artificial intelligence. It's called Automation Academy, automationacademy.com.
and it actually teaches people how to transition from their current job in operations to actually becoming a robot manager, right? So I think, you know, these types of jobs will start appearing, but there'll be a period where we'll go to some downfall.
Well, okay, so I'd like to open up the floor and see if anybody have any questions for our speakers. You know, we had an interesting discussion on topics that's highly relevant to knowledge workers, as a lot of people here are. Anybody have questions? Okay, so over here.
You wouldn't talk about it because there are still great potentials and we don't know what's going to happen in the future, but just curious. So in terms of AI, and they can train, we are training AI with good examples, and what do you see if they can train themselves and replace potentially your jobs in the future?
Yes, that is the part of the technology that we created replaces people who can create machine learning models or AI. It's called virtual data scientists. It's already, this technology is already here. So program that creates programs, right? AI that creates other AIs. So that is very much a potential, not only here now, but for the future. And as you create more advanced types of AIs that can self-optimize very, very fast, it will get to a level of superhuman intelligence very quickly, right? So right now we're sort of at more rudimentary level. And that's where, you know, sort of some of the people like Elon Musk's, they're being very cautious because you actually don't know how this self-improvement technology will work.
Any other questions over here?
Thanks for sharing. My name is Tiffany, and I'm from Sydney. We are a startup company based in Shanghai, and we use AI to predict humans' behaviors, and we're helping company to hiring the key talents based on the algorithm and AI. So in terms of the talent things, I remember Ms. Iya said that you think use AI to find the talent is a key things for organization now. So I was wondering if you can share me something about your strategy in terms of the talent recruiting.
Okay, you know, in the LinkedIn have shared with us, you know, the data of the, you know, AI talent in the AI summit last week. There's only the 50,000 AI talent in China. Okay, but maybe in the US maybe over ten times compared with in China. So, but we have the advantage in China market with lots of the, you know, graduates from the, you know, science and technology, you know, the majority. So we discussed about that before this session. We believe, you know, in very short term, 1 or 2 years, maybe China, you know, AI talent will be, you know, graduates from the AI majority will beyond, you know, the average, you know, level. So we have no worry about that, okay? So of course the company just like Shanghai will, you know, take a lot of effort to train, you know, talent. All the talent is we recruiting and recruiting is self-training by ourselves. So along with the more and more company come into the, you know, entering into the AI industry, those companies will also, you know, have a contribution to train the talent. So this market will be more and more, you know, so you have a good business. You should have a good business in the near future.
Thank you. Any other questions?
to go back to the reason why AI has started. Companies want to be more efficient, to have less risks, to have less workforce. So to be also to have less overhead. We know the positive outcome of the AI, right? But what would be for you the negative side?
Well, one of the questions our customers are always asking is, robots are doing stuff very, very fast 24/7, but what if they're doing stuff very, very wrong? And you saw in the US bank, a big US bank, there were a few million fraudulent accounts opened by robots. So that's a worst case scenario of runaway robots that are hacked and that are actually doing things maliciously, right? So you have to have technology and process in place. For instance, WorkFusion has extensive controls in place to make sure that robots are not performing something malicious. Because if you're replacing 70% of your work with digital workers, robots, it is you're pretty much giving up control of your operations, back office, and various other areas. So you better make sure that the technology you're implementing has a lot of these controls in place, because, you know, it could be mayhem, right? If somebody hacks in or it makes the robots do their own things. And like I said, in the US you already saw it, one of the top banks had over 2 million fake accounts open.
And Max, actually talk a little bit more about this. Talk in details of your security process. You know, how many, plan A, plan B, you know, if anything bad happens, how many layers of protection do you have?
Yes, so at the very simple level, it's humans checking robots, robots checking humans, and we call that 6-eye check, 8-eye check, right? It's essentially checking and double checking as part of the process, and not letting the other party know that they're being checked. But so it's robots checking humans, and humans are still continue to be in the loop and handle more difficult cases and checking what the robots are doing. So it has to be continuous monitoring on both sides. And obviously there's other things in technology. For instance, security. Every robot has to be treated like an employee from a security perspective. So when a robot starts work in a bank, it's assigned IDs and other things just like an employee, so you can't do anything outside of the central security monitoring. So the robot gets an ID, robots gets an email, all of these things. They don't get a desk, actually, which is nice. They don't need real estate, but they need to be provisioned. So it's very simple. It's integrating them as part of the security work. The robots have names, by the way. People name robots, you know, Alex, Peggy, and so forth and so on. But they have complete, replication of sort of your employee-based credentials, because it's very dangerous to let the robot just do whatever they want. So it's everything from double checking, triple checking, to extensive quality rules, to integrating with your existing security systems. So if anything goes wrong, there is an escalation procedure, just like in your operation. I mean, if you think about your existing human labor force, right? You're not protected from somebody doing something wrong. So if I'm processing loans, you know, if I'm the only decision maker, nothing stops me from processing the loans for my cousin for $100 million, right? Or paying an invoice to myself for $100. So, you know, you have certain issues that are not only limited to artificial intelligence, but they're, you know, fraud is a human-based issue. So you would apply, you know, what happens in the enterprise today, people double-check, triple-check for certain types of cases. And you replicate exactly the same criteria with your digital labor force. You don't let it run away. You just are able to do it within the technology platform with the use of AI.
Yeah, I agree with you. Because in the business case, we surely have a human being to monitor the robot. When they online, before they are, the robot online, have a several with a check. Very strong reason is how can human can monitor and control, because the knowledge what robot I had is human, is feeding, was feeding by the human being. So the human being will, you know, have the full responsibility of that, not the robot. So currently we have no such kinds of issue.
As a matter of fact, basically it's pretty kind of, you know, apparent right now. I mean, the cost structure right now to adopt an AI system is still pretty high. And also the process for adopting AI is pretty long. And it could turn out to be it's not really anything wanted. So basically, like, you know, yeah, in a very early learning process. So, I mean, for most companies, like, you know, it's kind of, you know, good for, you know, adopt AI to increase kind of efficiency, but also, it could really totally negative kind of side effect. Just like, you know, if you come back 5 years before you adopt a cloud solution in your company, it could, like, you know, save a lot of money, but it could kill your kind of service totally. If kind of Asia is down for kind of shelf rate, even AWS sometimes going down. So you kind of out of service for a certain time period, and you explain to customers that, sorry, because my cloud service provider is down. So that's a very not answer that your customer, your clients want to hear. So I mean, that's a potential kind of risk for the AI involved.
Yeah, hello. My question is for everybody. So I just want to ask, you mentioned universal basic income and for the industrial revolution, but right now, in the 2017, things are happening a lot faster. Good things are happening faster, but also bad things are way more disruptive and destructive. They cause a lot of problems for people. So, no, I just want to ask, the gap between the haves and haves not at the moment in the world is increasing. So, as you said, if 50% of the people lose their jobs to robots in the next 5 years, what is going to happen with the global economy? So, the gap is just going to increase even more. And how many industrial revolutions you think are one too many?
So, I agree with you. I think the growth is going to continue because if the corporations are able to use digital workforce and robots to perform all the work and to fulfill more work, let's say in China it's more about being able to process more versus, you know, reducing the cost structure. In the US it's reducing the cost structure. Their profits are going up, right? The revenues are going up, the production is going up, robots are working 24/7. So as corporate profits going up, you obviously will have reduction in personal income because the jobs are being lost. So there's a huge disparity. So I think the question, at least in the US, becomes how do you fund, you know, this was just a study came out on universal basic income that it's going to contribute to GDP growth, something around 12% over a period of 5 years. So how do you fund universal basic income? And some people are proposing robot tax, for instance, so the corporations have to pay more if they're employing more robots in order to fund this central bucket that's going to go towards the human beings. Because this is one of the most important issues right now, not to continue to grow the gap of disparity between corporate profits and human income, because obviously you will have no consumers for the corporate products and so forth and so on. So that's why that idea is the most interesting one that's being experimented on in Finland right now, small experiment in the US, and Switzerland, I think, is trying to do something.
Just for a second, Switzerland and Finland is okay. I'm sure they can afford it, but when this hits a country like India, where so many people work in the customer service sector, what's going to happen? I mean, this is going to cause, globally, it's going to be very disruptive.
Yeah, we have a big business in India, and I will spend a week there, actually, and these are the questions that I heard, you know. And we have a lot of Indian customers, but the big sector that's suffering right now is something that's called business process outsourcing sector that essentially took jobs or took certain processes and offshore them. They're actually firing a lot of people and using products like WorkFusion to automate things. So, you know, the answer there is to education, right? To find new types of jobs as fast as possible and still be able, you know, I don't have the answer, but it is a concern in India at the macro level right now because so much of their work depends on that repetitive type of things that can be automated very quickly.
So actually, I talked to Max last month at the RISE conference in Hong Kong, and we talked about universal basic income. And you actually told me you think the basic income will be different across different regions and countries. So it's not a standard, you know, everybody gets $200 a month. It's actually different in each country according to your income level. You know, just on the surface, it just seems so ridiculous, I guess. Well, maybe not.
I think it's the best idea that we have right now. And it's the simplest idea. That's right, the amount of money you will receive will be paid. You know, I know there's an experiment going on, for instance, in Africa that's sponsored by Silicon Valley entrepreneurs. And, you know, the amount of money there is about $50 per month, whereas the experiment in the U.S. had $1,000 a month. In Finland, it's $800 a month. But I think it's our best way to sort of avoid the massive sort of downfall of the economy and loss of jobs right now.
Okay. Any other questions? Last question before we close. Over here, and just the two of you. Thank you.
Thank you. Actually, I'm from the Consulate General of Canada. So as we talk about, I'm the not the big industry people, so I'm trying to understand the issues right now. And as we know that the DeepMind just opened an office in University of Alberta in Canada. So I just wonder, may I have this question for Ken, that based on your point of view, that what kind of technologies or say what kind of companies that you're looking for? And since you are in China, I assume probably you're looking for companies in China only. But based on the investor's point of view, what kind of technologies, what kind of companies you think that they have a future? Thank you.
So basically, I think like, you know, yeah, we kind of mainly focus in China, but we also kind of think about investing in Europe, and also we heavily invest in Southeast Asia because we think that's what the so-called the expanding market for the China kind of companies. So I think from our perspective, like, I always say different kind of country, different areas, we have different focus. Like for China, we're still looking for the companies who is like, you know, we sort of believe like, you know, the so-called purely kind of customer-oriented, like, you know, the end customer-oriented market is very tough in China already, because I think like, you know, you guys all kind of heard like BAT has been grabbed most of the volume on the internet, and the cost acquired the so-called end user is much more expensive, and also the competition get more fierce, like, you know, because BAT actually invests a lot of companies in the so-called whatever the area you think they could be interested. But I think we talk about that's the reason why we like AI kind of companies, because we think the enterprise service here and also globalized, you still have big room to kind of, you know, to deploy. Because, I mean, to be kind of business totally different from the so-called the end customer kind of user kind of business, because I think enterprise has a very kind of, you know, clear kind of road path where to go. And they know where the pinpoint is, even they may not know the solution, what the solution is, but they understand what's kind of, you know, what's kind of fundamental things they're looking for. So I think for the enterprise solution kind of providers, you should have kind of compare clear customer group. And also, you don't need to spend tons of marketing bands to acquire users, because it's different from the kind of C-end users. There's sometimes a promotion, some type of kind of free kind of service. Of course, they will kind of adopt your kind of solution or whatever, and they can try it and they can drop it off after you kind of increase the price. But for the enterprise solutions, I think the customer usually like to be more cautious, but when they really think your solution is good, they pay for your service. And also, I think in China, I talked to kind of, you know, the Nina before, I think China has experienced the so-called the new era, which is people trying to build a new infrastructure, especially in the digital area. No matter what sector is, no matter it's manufacturing, kind of agriculture, also like, you know, of course, the so-called artificial intelligence, IoT. So it's different kind of sort of infrastructure to build up. So for this new infrastructure, we see more opportunities for the enterprise, also for the service provider for the enterprise to come up. And also, I think China has good opportunity for a lot of foreign companies, because we are looking, just as kind of, you know, the Xiaoyi mentioned, we basically short of talent in a great way. So one of the ways, of course, we kind of training more talent here. The other way is actually adopt solution or service from the kind of outside of China kind of, you know, countries who have talent for the companies and for the solutions. We would like those companies to provide service in China. So also we also invest companies who kind of target China market instead of like, you know, just like, you know, your only local companies. So I think that's the thing we're looking at. We're looking to the people who feed those new kind of, you know, new sectors, emerging sectors. We're looking for the people who has so-called viable kind of also the fundamental kind of, you know, feasible solutions. And also, we want to those companies run on a lean way instead of just try to kind of, you know, raise more money and trying to kind of expand their service. We think that euro could be happening in China in certain times as kind of, you know, phrase, but we think that's kind of, you know, so-called a sort of waste, because we don't need to kind of, you know, all there has kind of 10 different bikes for you to ride. We only need one or two, that's enough. But for enterprise, we need different kind of providers to actually to provide different values.
We have last question.
There's a lot of excitement. People talk about AI. Many companies, startups, they brand themselves as being AI driven. And there's a lot of cash investments going to those startups, which actually reminds me maybe the internet bubble, where basically any company having E in front of them received lots of cash, you know, from investors who always are looking for a high return. So do you think there's also a bubble coming with the AI?
And Max maybe have more kind of, you know, can add. I think, like, you know, I think it's different from internet, because at the internet, every penny you're expanding to the company actually directly impact the so-called end users. So usually what we spend becomes sort of like, you know, the influence for the end customers. And actually sometimes, as we mentioned earlier, like, you know, we at VC, we actually bring the bad habit for the end users. Because we make them believe the service should be free, and make them believe think the service should be cheap. But for the artificial intelligence, yes, certainly, we put a lot of money into the sector, but actually it's impacted the so-called the market less. Because no matter how much money you put into the company, when it goes to the customer may not adopt the solution. So, you know, of course, our money goes to so-called bubble side. But it didn't impact the market. The market is still running the house rate. It's not, I mean, the bank will not, because Max said, I give you every kind of solution, I give you for free, so adopt a Max solution. I don't think the enterprise will do that. So no matter how much money you pour into Max company, if the solution is not good, it's just a waste on, I mean, not waste, but we just like to bring to Max and he spend himself. He's not impact the market directly. So I think the bubble, on the bubble impact side, I think AI has less kind of effect. At least from my perspective, or maybe it's that the effect could be not. I mean, it's not important.
From my perspective, it's not a bubble, but there's a lot of going on what is called AI washing. So you see a lot more marketing about companies that are 20 years old and adding AI, and everybody talks about AI. So rather than sort of just being a financial bubble, it's more of a mass confusion of the market, because customers are confused, what is AI and so forth and so on. So it's just more of a confusion and lack of what is called like killer use case, right? So I think it's a lot more just AI washing going on than financial fraud in the sense of companies raising money that are not financially viable.
I just have one last remark to add on that topic. Sequoia Capital, one of their partners, recently just said about AI companies' valuations currently. Sure, they're high, but same as mobile internet, 5% of the companies make 95% of the returns for VCs. So the entry price for the VCs is irrelevant. If, you know, you can invest in the company with an ultra high valuation, but if they're going to turn out to be the 5%, you know, making 95% of your returns, really, you know, you want to just get bet on those companies. So with that, I'd like to thank everyone here for joining us, and also I hope you enjoyed our discussion. We have about 20-30 minutes for us to network and meet each other. So thank you so much for coming, and I look forward to saying hi to some of you. Okay, thank you.
Thank you, Mina.
And thank you, yes, sorry, thank you.